Kicker conspiracy, of course, by the fall, and one an Uber fan. I think that's not overstating it. Is Stuart Lee? Hey, Stuart. I mean, it's sad news, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
When did your love affair with the fall begin?
Well, you know, like a lot of people, when I was a teenager, I used to listen to John Peel under the bedclothes at night, and I remember it was sort of in between. In the run up to the Hex Induction Hour album, they were playing lots of sessions by The Fall and whatever. I found it incredibly annoying, the music. I thought it's repetitive and droning, and the man can't sing, and the words don't make any sound. I sort of hated it, and gradually, by attrition, I became absolutely fascinated in it. And I think it's, of course, they're my favourite group of all time because of that. And I think it's brilliant that way that your initial reaction to it can be so strong. But you know there's something there, and then it just, once it's got you, you know, you never let it go.
I was going to ask you what drew you in, so it's interesting, really, because you've said initially it repelled you. So yeah. So that's an even more interesting question than it first appeared, isn't it? What made you stick with it?
I don't know. It was, you couldn't escape it if you listened to John Peel. I think it just sort of clicked with the I'm Into CB single, really, and I realised that it was sort of meant to be funny as well, which I think was a very important part of The Fall, which I hope doesn't get overlooked in all the analysis now. It's just quite how hilarious it was. You know, I mean, there are lots of great little lyrical snapshots of people and ideas realised with an absurd satirical economy. And of course, the actual idea of the concept of the group over, you know, more than four decades of this incredibly fluid thing fronted by a man who appeared not to want to be there. It's just, you know, and for it to be even considered as entertainment is just so, it was so funny. And a lot of the fun of being a Fall fan as well was being part of this sort of joke, I think, where he'd kind of make you, certainly being a Fall fan in London, almost to punish you, the gigs would be on in the weirdest places, like semi-abandoned Irish social clubs up in Cricklewood or derelict discos in Croydon, and you'd go to these places and you never knew which side of the line separating a transcendental show from a one that didn't click it was going to be. And I will miss the adventure of being a Fall fan and of being part of this sort of tacit, you know, this community of people that you get to sort of tacitly know, who have this sort of begrudging loyalty to it. You know,
I mean, I'm not making comparisons, but people who follow Dylan, obviously, one of the kind of things they do, they go to concerts and try and work out what Dylan songs Dylan is playing.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think there was something of the Fall in that way? You know, because we're so used to show business these days, where it runs like, you know, it just runs
great
to the same cues every time.
It,
you never knew what you were going to get.
It was so exciting and unpredictable that, you know, you didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, if I wasn't working and they had like a 4-night run in places, I would try and go every night, and the difference between one night and the next could be just astounding. I mean, year before last, I saw them 4 nights in a row in Islington, and the different way he interpreted different songs at vastly different lengths on different nights would be totally different, and depending on what attitude he brought to the stage, whether it was playful or hostile or whatever, and you'd never got to the end of it, and whichever the album recorded version of a song was, rather like Dylan, that was just what happened that day. You know, that was that take, and they were fluid and could change. And I loved the fact that it, for rock music, it had incredible improvisatory elements, but also this grinding, crushing, pulverizing repetition at the same time. And I still had that thing like a kid, you know, when's the new album out, you know, wanting to hear what it was.
And would you sit down, you've obviously studied the lyrics and everything, because another thing, live, you couldn't hear what he was saying at all, really, a lot of the time. So did you actually sit and try and decipher the words to get the little bonmots out of it?
Well, you could. I mean, they were much more clear in the mid-80s, but I think he sort of ran away from when he's a sort of bloke, you know, when they were saying he was a great poet and a brilliant lyricist, and I think then the thing he would do then is shy away from that. And in the last few albums he was rather brilliantly experimenting, I think, with a kind of incoherence where the voice was becoming like a growl or a bark, and he was trying these sort of textures, and there'd be tiny little phrases still pop out. On the last album, the phrase that popped out was, we worship at the altar of phyllo pastry. I noticed that in there somewhere. In amongst them, they would just go, and stuff like that. You know, it was superb. I never tired of it. And actually, part of the mystery of it was the way little snatches would jump out at you and you wondered what it was all about. You know?
What was the best fall gig you ever saw, do you think?
I saw 52.
Right.
Right, so it is a blur, but probably, like everyone says, the best album's the one they hear first. And the first four gig I saw, they played Conspiracy at it, I think. I don't think it had come out at that point. It was at the Elephant Fair, which was a hippie festival in Cornwall, where they brought a black cloud of sarcastic menace to an idyllic environment and did... you know, Garden and Smile and all these long epic tracks. Bricks had just joined, so there was this extra vocal quality. They still had the two drummer lineup, and it was all lit by flaming torches, and it was just I'll never forget that. And it was a sort of moment where, I mean, I've written about it before, but I thought I didn't realise quite how exciting culture could be, you know. And from that night, and I knew things like that, you know, they set you on a course. I mean, lots of people have said this sort of thing, and it's important not to make reminiscences of someone else about you, but I would have an utterly different life without the four. They got me reading Camus, they got me reading Sartre, Lovecraft, Arthur Machen, they got me listening to Can and the Velvet Underground, and they got me into, well, you know, I saw Ted Chippington, the comedian, opening for them, I'd never have seen otherwise, and he was why I'm a stand-up. So, I mean, they and I've made and maintained friendships as a result of liking them, and so you know, and it gives this sort of cycle to your life, you know. When's the next Fall album coming out, and where should we go and see them? And for lots of people, that, you know, it's hard to know what will replace that.
So genuinely life changing.
Yeah, you know, and also I think they probably mean a lot to a very specific sort of person. I mean, you know, after Bowie died, it was a general. Everyone knew who he was, and everyone had a position, you know, a notion of his place in the culture. With the Fall, I think it's a very intense thing for particular people, and it's strange where, you know, he was on Newsnight, but you know, 95% of the people watching it will never have heard of them, and yet the impact they have on the niche that likes them is just tremendous.